Thanks, Jean-Marie. A lot of you have already congratulated Patricia for putting this event together, so I will not repeat this. But I have very humbly to congratulate you for your sense of timing, Patricia. Having the sort of art of anticipation and prediction which you manifested in organizing this event this day, when after 18 years we gathered the formal accession of Russia, is an incredible performance. It's like wanting to shoot on Mars, you know. So, very well done, and next time I have to organize something somewhere, I'll take your advice as seriously as I always do, but on this even more seriously. Second, of course, it's a bit of a trip in the past for me. To have at the same table my friend Long Yong Tu and my friend Pierre Defagne, who were essential actors at the time. Long Yong Tu, everybody knows. Pierre Defagne, who at that time was my chief of staff and who also played an important role in the bilateral negotiation between the EU at the time and China, which is, by the way, probably why he has kept such a deep interest in Chinese issues. So I'm glad to be with them and with you, although I had to swear when I joined this organization that I would remember nothing from my previous lives. So I've sworn this, and please report I've been faithful to this pledge. But two, it's always good to be back with friends who worked so hard. And by the way, the reason why I had to leave this session for some time has to do with the art of anticipation of Patricia. So you are the one because of which I could not attend the whole of this session, having, as you understand, quite a lot of work to do on the media after sale of what happened with Russia today. No conclusions, but just a few remarks taken from this experience, from what was done at the time and what has happened since. First, and I think that's the most important lesson, conclusion, and I don't think it will surprise any of you. These things have a lot to do with leadership, with vision, with strategy, with clear ideas of where you want to go and why you want to go there. I can now disclose a conversation I had at the time with Premier Su Wongji. Of course, Long Yong Tu was reporting to Che Wangsheng. Of course, formally. The reality was that the policy line, the political line you had was very much with the Premier. And I had a conversation at the time with Tu Wongji, who at the time where the bilateral negotiation between China and the EU was very difficult. We were asking for things which China would not do. And he explained to me in extremely simple terms, which are the convincing terms, why there were things he could do and why there were things he could not do. And because he was a very clever and shrewd negotiator, after having explained what he could not do, he sort of opened a few doors on things which the EU had not asked for, but which he might do. which is what clever negotiators do. But the most striking thing in this conversation was his strategic vision, which, and I sum it up, not to make the story too long, what he told me with Duke. This country needs growth. Below 6% or above 10%, the bicycle will fall, and the party wants to remain on the bicycle. In order to grow within this range, which is my political sustainability range, this country needs lots of reforms. Now, the party has a lot of power in this country, and there are many of these reforms that the political energy of the party will do. But that's not enough. I know this country. I know what the party can do in this country. Party can't do it all. So we need another source of energy for these reforms, and when you don't have it, you buy it. And I buy it in this decision to join the World Trade Organization, because I know I have to subscribe disciplines, which probably internally would be more difficult to explain, to package. So I need this addition. And this addition, I'm ready to pay at a price. But that's the price. And that won't be more than that, because if I concede more than that, then I negate my political sustainability strategy. And that was it. And I must say, and Pierre probably remembers this, it was very convincing. And no, negotiations only unfold when negotiators are convinced that the other side is not just bargaining, cheating. There is always a moment of truth, a moment of sincerity. And of course, this is why leadership matters a lot. And the real guy who was behind Long Yongtu's instructions, and then Long Yongtu had his own sort of art skill to interpret this, to report on this, was Premier Zhu Rongji. And by the way, and I don't insist on that because it's already been mentioned quite a number of times, that's the same sort of leadership which Hu Jintao showed last week in Cannes when he announced this 97% duty-free, quota-free for LDCs, which, frankly speaking, was not obvious. He knows full well, and the Chinese leadership knows full well, that in doing this, China is taking a commitment at a level which is a developed country level, not a developing country level. Now, of course, he did not insist on this at all, for obvious reasons. He's extremely polite and diplomatic, but he had, for sure, to fight this argument, which came from inside the system, that in going in the direction, he was sort of creating a precedent that might backfire. But he nevertheless did it because there is a strategy behind this, which, by the way, is not only a trade strategy, but a diplomatic strategy. So that's, in my view, the first lesson. It works when leaders have a vision, strategies. There's a need of art, there's a need of know-how, there's a need of shrewdness, but that's the determining factor. Second, and I don't need to insist on this, this vision, this strategy, this boldness paid. I think nobody can now dispute the fact that this was the right decision for China and for the multilateral trading system. So having a vision is a strategy is great. When it works, it's even greater. So it's a necessary condition. It's not a sufficient condition. I think it worked. It worked for China, it worked for the system, and it, in a way, gave an example to other countries which, in the meantime, have followed the same route. There's a virtue of example. Given the size of China, given its history, when China joins the organization, other members who had not joined understood they should join, and it's probable that Russia, the Russia deal of today, has something to do with this sort of virtue of leading by example. Third remark, which has to do with what Pierre-Louis Gérard said a moment ago, with this, in a way, strange simultaneity in Doha between launching the round and China's accession. As if at the time, and I take my part of that, we were running the same machine on two different softwares. The Doha round was launched with the old North-South software, with the view that developing countries had expressed that the Euro round had a number of leftovers and that a number of rules of international trade were still biased against developing countries because they had been framed by the powers of the time. And if you frame the rules and you're a power, you always frame the rule to the tune of your interests. On the other side, developed countries at the time did recognize that, but for the price of developing countries moving more into the system of market opening and disciplines, which developed countries had agreed between themselves. The story of the GATT is a story of developed countries agreeing on a sort of reciprocity basis to open market and to subscribe level playing disciplines between themselves, while developing countries benefiting from the MFN impact of this reciprocity deal and slowly, but very slowly, joining the system. And that was the software of the Doha round. Now, on the same day, under the same chair, with the same gavel, China joined the organization on a different software. China joined the organization under terms which were totally new for a developing country. China joined and accepted industrial tariff ceilings around average. And we know averages are not the whole truth, 9.5%, whereas other emerging countries, industrial tariff ceilings today are still 30-40%. China's agricultural bindings 10 years ago were lower than the at the time EU tariffs. So in a way, on the one side, we were still on a sort of typical North-South issue. On the other side, we were de facto creating a third layer of rights and obligations, a third tier of layers and obligations for China as an emerging country. And I'm glad Ambassador Girard spotted this, because in reality, this is what has haunted the Doha round. This sort of two different parts of the brain wanting something but differently is one of the reasons, one if not the main explanation, of what we are still deadlocked. because the fine-tuning of this third emerging country layer of tier of rights and obligations in between developed countries and developing countries, poorer developing countries, is still what hasn't worked yet. We know the terms of the debate between basically US on one side, who say, well, emerging countries have now emerged, so level the playing field. And by the way, China has led by example, because the Chinese level playing field is much more level than others. And on the other side, emerging countries saying, okay, we do accept that we have to take more rights, more obligations and disciplines that poorer countries, but not to the point of leveling the playing field, because we are still developing countries. And just by coincidence, and thanks again to Patricia's sense of anticipation, that was one of the questions I got in the press conference we did together with the chair of the Working Party and the Russian chief negotiator at noon. And the question was, how would you compare Russian's terms of accession to China's terms of accession? In other words, in this various multi-tiered system, where is Russia? Huh? As compared to China, 10 years ago. And the answer was, Russia joins in terms which are fairly more stringent than what China did 10 years ago. Not hugely, but fairly. But again, one of these coincidences which help you understand what's happening. Last point, of course, the projection of what happened 10 years ago, the lessons you've this afternoon drawn from what's happened since, do redress quite a lot of sort of wrong perceptions about what international trade is today and what China's role in international trade is today. I read, of course, a lot about trade, including listening or reading media, and I see quite a lot of, on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of China, in the Western press, China joined on the cheap. Which is, by the way, why now we have problems with China. Now, wrong, and I think anybody who has a bit of knowledge about trade issues and numbers, we know that China did not join on the cheap. On the contrary, and what Pierre-Louis said, and probably Stuart, clearly contradicts this perception. And it's always good when you're serious to look at numbers. Now, does this mean that China's trade, China's business practices are clean and 100% okay? Of course not. And one of the reasons why the answer is no is that WTO disciplines only cover a part of trade-related business practices. We only cover disciplines where our members have agreed that the issue should be disciplined by multilateral rules. So there are holes in our system. And by the way, some of these holes, if they were filled, probably could address a number of problems which foreign investors or foreign companies operating on the Chinese market have. But they probably, on the other side, might also address problems which China has in reaching out to foreign markets, including, for instance, on investment. We all know that for the moment, one of the problems China has in international trade is not so much trade. It's investment. But, sorry guys, but that's not within the WTO disciplines. It's with bilateral disciplines, but not with WTO disciplines. So all this creates, I think, in a way, an extremely useful transition linkages to the problems of today and the ones we still have to solve. And I'm sure that the sort of relooking at the experience, measuring its impact, is something which is important, if not unattended consequence for our members as they prepare for the ministerial next month. What you've discussed, the issues which you've put on the table, are very much in the present. They're not about what happened 10 years ago, they are issues of today. And understanding these issues is, in my view, a major contribution to the collective wisdom which we need and which I hope will bring, including with the knowledge and the informed opinions which all of you have been able to make, will help moving this system forward. It's a system that's in the hands of our members. It needs their care. It needs their knowledge. And I think what we've had today and the presence of our friends is an important contribution to that. And let me thank you all for this contribution.